Number six, Fish Passage Technology, the Whoosh System. This is a briefing. Whoosh us away.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Director, thank you very much for having us today. It's a real privilege to be here to provide this presentation. We're going to be going over, my name is Todd Delligan. I'm Vice President of Fish Transport at Whoosh Innovations, and we have Eric Kinney.
Yeah, Eric Kinney, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Hatchery Reform Coordinator for Southwest Washington.
And Vince Bryan, the CEO of Whoosh Innovations.
And we also have in the audience Jeannie McKnight, who is on our team, and she's a 25-year veteran of the seafood industry, as well as Linda Chavez, who is recently retired after a 38 career in NOAA. So we'd like to welcome everybody. But thank you very much for having us. We are going to go through who we are today, what we've done currently, and then where we're going. But we're going to start with a few videos here, and one is an introductory video on what we actually do. And yes, these are 12 to 28 plus pound Chinook traveling through our Whoosh transport tube. We'll see more on this as we talk about our Washougal Weir system through Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. But the system works with pressure differentials. We introduce a pressure differential around a fish, higher pressure behind, lower pressure in front, and that fish then transports very easily through our flexible tube. We introduce a little bit of water for lubrication, and fish travel anywhere from 10 to 15 meters per second. This is a view inside the tube itself as a fish is traveling along. We've also had a little bit of fun this last year in particular. We're going to start with another visual. We want to talk about, and why we're really here, is to talk about the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Washougal Weir System. It is a mobile system that was in operation in fall of 2014 and will be in operation in fall of 2015. And it operates on the Washougal River down in southwest Washington outside of Vancouver. And it operates as part of the Fall Chinook Hatchery Program. The weir is used to collect hatchery and natural origin fish for broodstock purposes, and the weir is also used for controlling hatchery fish on the spawning grounds. This is a 120-foot system that was utilized by the department to transport fish from the trap itself 120 feet up an embankment to a waiting hatchery truck. Eric will talk a little bit more about the specifics of why this system was needed at this particular location, but this is the system attached and deployed at the weir. Our pump house easily attaches to the trap itself. Here is the waiting truck at the top. Distance, again, is about 120 feet. Fish were making this journey between 4 to 8 seconds. These are hatchery technicians in the trap itself loading fish. Each of these fish is trapped or marked. There's the person up on the upper left keeping track of exactly what is going on. They are looking for broodstock. They are also looking for males. And they are identifying adipose fins that have been clipped and segregating out the wild fish, which then from the trap continue up the river. The system itself uses a little bit of water. We're using approximately 8 gallons an hour. This system was designed to be set up and taken down every single day. You can see the tube hanging on a wire. It took about 30 minutes to set up in the morning and about that equal amount of time. There was a concern here at the weir with theft, and so the system needed to be entirely mobile. You'll see on the trailer itself up here, we have a gen set. All of the tubes are wrapped up. The tube itself is wheeled up at the end of the day and extended out in the morning and can be driven away every single day. Ultimately ended up staying here, but that was the original design. Inside pressure around each fish is about 1 PSI, so somewhere between 2 to 3 feet of water. It's a wet environment, so we will talk about physiological effects, if any, on the fish through several studies that we have had done here. The system was used to collect 10,000 live broodstock. There were 10,000 live Chinook this year. 4,000 broodstock and 6,000 surplus were sent through the system itself. And that is a picture of the trailer system. And now Eric will answer some.
So getting back to why the Washougal Weir is in place, and so we're using it for collecting broodstock on site and transporting them to Washougal Hatchery, and also for removal to control what we call PHAS, hatchery fish on the spawning grounds. The project started some 4+ years ago, trying to figure out how we were going to handle fish at the weir on the Washougal. We went through HSRG review in 2009. We made some modifications to the program, reduced the program from 4 million to 3 million. But in order to maintain that 3 million production, we needed to figure out a way to control hatchery fish on the spawning grounds. It's a primary population for recovery. And so we installed the weir. It's like a resistance board weir, so it's a floating weir. Over the first few years of the project, we were struggling to figure out how we were going to move fish from the trap to put them into the truck. We ended up using a forklift with an extendable fork and a tote on the front. And that didn't work very well. It took three tote trips per truck to load the truck. It was very time consuming. So with this Whoosh system that we purchased in 2014, it's cut the time in half. And what that allows us to do is it allows us to ship our staff to other locations to do stream surveys, to go do work at the hatchery. But it also allows us to remove more fish because we are able to get them out in a faster manner to where we're allowing more fish to recruit into the trap box so we can remove more fish from the system and control PHAS. The system cost about $150,000, and it was funded through Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Funds.
And commissioners, please, if you have questions, we can operate both questions during the presentation as well as after. So if an open dialogue is welcomed as well.
Are you based in the region? Or?
Yes. We are based in Bellevue, Washington. Now, how did we get to the place that we are at today with the department itself? This has been a 5-6 year development process with a number of studies and multiple partners that have come along the way here. In 2011, we began with an initial study sponsored by the Columbia River Research Lab, which is part of the U.S. Geological Survey. It was the initial threshold test where we looked at a 50-foot system and any physiological effects on rainbow trout. Dr. Matt Mesa at the Columbia River Research Lab had a no difference finding from a control group and in comparison to our 50-foot transport tube, and really made the suggestion that this was a great first step and let's continue to move down the path. 2013 and 2014, we've installed a couple of pilot systems in Norway and seafood processing plants, really to test hygiene, to test the gentle nature of the system itself, and to test throughput. We have built a 250-foot system and a 450-foot system, and what we have found, both excellent hygiene, excellent throughput. In one system, the 460-foot system, we're transporting approximately 1,000 fish an hour. 2013 and 2014, a pilot study with the Yakima Nations. A shout-out to the Yakimas, who have been a terrific partner of ours throughout this development process. We are going to talk in more detail about the results of the 2014 study in just a few minutes. Spring of 2014, prior to the department purchasing the system for the Washougal, they wanted to know what the effects were going to be. In April of 2014, we set up a 250-foot system at the Kalama Hatchery, again in southwest Washington, and tested live steelhead in a compare and contrast to a control group. After a month of holding, there was a no difference finding, and at that moment, then, the department decided to move ahead with the purchase of the system for the Washougal. 2014, the Washougal operation was in effect, and we've talked a little bit about that. Also in the fall of 2014, just about six months ago here, we received a grant from the U.S. Department of Energy to test both a 40-foot system and a 250-foot system, and that was by and through the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory at the Priest Rapids Hatchery. This testing was completed in November, and it was tracked. Eggs were tracked all the way through here into January and February. We'll have some more discussion about that. The Yakima study itself last fall, this is the Yakima operation at Rosa Dam. It's a Bureau of Reclamation dam outside of the city of Yakima. The actual fish facility is here on the left. All fish come up a fairly traditional fish ladder and arrive here. One fun quote, one really neat quote here by Mark Johnston, a research scientist for the Yakima Nation's fisheries. You know, what they really found is that the fish fly right through without so much as a scratch. Also, you won't need to have to divert water as you do in a ladder system. Out here, the economy is all about agriculture and water is gold. That's what makes Whoosh such a great concept. Well, what was happening at Rosa? As mentioned, all the fish come up through a traditional fish ladder. In the fish facility itself, there is a false weir that attract fish for what in essence is volitional passage up and over, dewatered. All of the fish slide down through an open trough. Fish are then weighed, measured, pit tagged, fin clipped. This all looks pretty familiar to everybody here, probably. Some of the fish are returned to the river. And other fish are collected for broodstock purposes. These fish then make a trip up to the Kali Alum hatchery. This is a traditional way in which they transport fish to the truck. So this is the hand carry and toss method of fish transport. Spring and summer of 2014, the Yakimas set up a system, a little 40-foot system that we did a compare and contrast from the traditional hand carry and toss method into the back of the truck. Last summer, they transported a number of fish, but this is an example of what now happens here at Rosa. Travel time for the fish, instead of somewhere between 13 and 16 seconds, is about 2 through the system itself with delivery right back into the truck. And if you've ever wanted to be a fish through the Whoosh system, this is what it looks like. And we're now back in water. We also tested volitional entry this last summer of 2014. We'll talk more extensively about where we're going here this summer and into the future with volitional entry, but what we did from an initial study standpoint to try to get fish into our system is take out a section of the open trough and we placed our pump house. From the Yakima perspective, they weren't concerned at all. They thought it would be very hard to miss, and we, in fact, proved that out with our first initial testing here. We've recently come back from a test down in Newport, Oregon. Vince and Jeannie were down there yesterday, and we had some very good success with some new initial volitional entry testing as well. Summer of 14, May and June, salmon were collected, 554 spring Chinook, both wild and hatchery were collected. About 18% or so were sent through the Whoosh tube. They were held until September and October, where they respond. The results were very positive. The mortality rate of Whooshed fish was about half of the traditional method. And, you know, again, the Yakimas have been doing this for a long period of time, and they have, you know, really traditionally low mortality. So it was a great hurdle for us to get over, and we were successful there. Egg survival, they tracked all of the eggs right through January and into February. Again, great returns here. Egg survival percentages were statistically equivalent at this. We are going to point out one little thing, the difference between the 92.1% and the 94.6%, the capture rate for the wild fish was very, very low. There were only just a few, so there was a slight difference. But what the Yakimas determined, it was from a statistical standpoint, absolutely equivalent. They were thrilled by the results of the test, and they are conducting this same test as we speak today for this summer of 2015.
The mortality rate was low, but what was it attributed to? Whatever, just
Yeah. I asked that question, too. All those fish were held for 3 to 4 months before from the capture period, May to June, and they traditionally have that. So it wasn't unusual from their perspective.
Chair, even up to the point where one or two jumped out and died. So, yeah. The Yakimas, they are traditionally in the 10% or lower anyway from year in and year out. And so this was a great test for us because with that, what is low mortality across the board here from a year in and year out basis, it was good to see that we were having, no different effect.
Thank you.
In fall of 2014, as mentioned, again, the U.S. Department of Energy provided the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory a grant to test a 40-foot system and a 250-foot system. The PNNL study tested slime, stress, and survivability, right down as well as the overall physiological effects. The key findings of this, the test itself was a control group, a trap and haul operation, as well as our 40 and 250-foot systems. The key findings here were no mortalities or obvious signs of injury to the fish in either the 40-foot system or the 250-foot system. The immune responses in egg survival were similar between whoosh and trap and haul, and the effects of the whoosh were comparable or better to the trap and haul program. The results of this test will hopefully be delivered at the fisheries conference that's coming up, the American Fisheries Society conference, their annual conference in August in Portland. So we can look to that for some more details. And it is also working its way through the publication process. This is an example of fluorescein. They used fluorescein to determine whether there was any difference between the control group or fish that had been whooshed. And as we all know, fluorescein looks to damage on skin. Here was even testing slime or eyes. And you can see the control group is on the top and the whooshed fish was on the bottom. Another little kind of fun tidbit, they brought, the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory brought their fish sensor along with them. And this fish sensor is a fairly elaborate and technical piece of equipment. It is used to test pressure for fish going through hydroelectric turbines and over spill weirs and everything else. It measures PSI from 0 to 200, and they brought it along to see what the PSI was. And we had asked them, well, maybe we need something that's slightly more sensitive. We'll see what we actually come up with here. And they said, well, we're going to test this. And they put the fish in, and they came back, and they said, well, you're correct. We basically got atmosphere somewhere between 0 and 1, and that was what we expected, but it was great to see that that actually came through on the sensor itself. Where are we going to go in the future? We hope to have multiple applications here, from volitional live fish passage at permanent barriers such as hydroelectric dams to a whoosh and haul instead of a traditional trap and haul system. We can contemplate fish rescue with drought happening throughout the West Coast. Are there instances where we can set up quickly temporary situations where we can pull fish out of situations where they are not going to survive and then either truck them or get them places just slightly upriver where they can then continue their journey? Transport and surplus was utilized at the Washougal this year. Separating also live fish from hatchery fish, again, an example being the Washougal, but we can simply envision this throughout the region itself. And then also in hatchery programs for broodstock handling. In the seafood processing industry, it's vitally important with very expensive fish to keep them alive and move them from tank to tank. Today, there's not a very good way to do that without a lot of physical handling. These types of handling practices also happen in our state-run hatcheries. Is there an easier method in which to transport, broodstock from tank to tank? Yes. This is an example of a volitional entry side channel. Where we are really moving here is complete hands-free feeding into our system. This was a design for the Buckley Diversion Dam. You're all probably familiar with the Buckley Diversion Dam. It is a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers-run facility outside of Buckley on the White River. It is a trap facility for ESA-listed Chinook and Coho. You have all mentioned here, and we've had a presentation on what's about to happen here in 2015 and every odd year in the pink salmon return. Pinks this year are estimated somewhere between 800,000 and 1 million returning to the White River. The problem at the trap that the Corps has is the collection of the ESA Chinook and Coho with all of the quantities of pink salmon that are returning. It's made it almost impossible to do that. We are going to set up a system on a side channel, in a side channel that sits just below the trap itself, and test whether we can have volitional entry of pink salmon into our system and load trucks more efficiently and effectively to get them out of the way to hopefully provide the Corps a better opportunity to collect the ESA Chinook. This is the initial step this summer, and if all goes well, maybe full implementation as we look to the 2017 and 2019 returns. But what we envision here and what we hope to see by mid-July and for full operation by the full return in mid-August is a complete hands-free system where we are attracting the pink salmon, entering into our pump house itself, and then delivery into a truck for then transport above Mud Mountain Dam.
I might just add, Todd, that
please.
The reason Todd said hopefully is that we are engaged with National Marine Fisheries Service, a concern that an occasional jack salmon could be attracted into the system and that be interpreted as a take. So I can tell you the support from all the agencies here saying, hey, you're going to have 200,000 pinks die in the river and they're going to be blocking the Chinook, and there's going to be a take that way, seems to be irrelevant to the fact that we may attract a few jack salmon into our system as well. So we have been bringing political pressure to this point as well. But given that you purchased a system last year, I can tell you Department of Fish and Wildlife, Washington State, is really being looked at as a leader in this area right now because of your experiences with the system. So to the extent that you are bringing that information, if you will, to the other agencies as well, is critical for us in being able to try to solve these problems.
Yeah, if I may ask a question on that, it seems to me that the way that the agency, NOAA in this case, should view this is what is the risk of doing versus not doing, carrying out these types of experiments?
I couldn't agree with you more on that. And I think the tribes would agree with you, both the Puyallup and the Muckleshoot are very supportive of this. Trout Unlimited is there. They got a grant to help make this happen. The Army Corps of Engineers is afraid that this would be a liability for them if they were to even transport the fish in the truck. So they had initially offered a truck to transport the fish that went through the WHOOSH system above the dam. We just were informed yesterday that they can't supply the truck. The Puyallup said that they have an extra truck that we can use, but we have to have a special driver with special license permits to be able to drive the truck. So now all we were trying to do was a study. That's how this started. but I think you're right, Commissioner, there is a problem here in the regulations that exist don't allow, frankly, for innovation within their rules. If they're interpreted as guidelines, you're probably okay. But if they're interpreted as strict rules that must be followed, then it's automatically in this experimental category of which the agencies are really not prepared to deal with it. They have guidelines for that, but aren't really staffed and or have the mentality even to want to try anything new. It creates perhaps more work for them.
We can talk later on what you really feel on this.
I'd be happy to do that.
It is encouraging, though. I mean, we have come through just even this past week with conversations with NOAA and the regional administrator at NOAA, and really have been encouraged to continue along and work, you know, almost exclusively here with the Puyallups, which the Puyallups are ready, willing, and able to do in the experimental process arena. And so we really hope to have this up and running by the end of July for the run, which is inevitable. It is coming, and there is going to be a problem. Back to a little bit of volitional testing. So how do we know that this is going to work? We have been working on volitional entry here now for about a year, and these are designs that we did not have to come up with. The Yakimas have been influential here in designs for attracting and collecting fish. So we have built some of our own systems. This is a very first system. This is over at the Yakimas just about a week and a half ago, and this is with live Chinook. And it was very encouraging from an initial threshold standpoint to see the attraction flow and to see fish head right into our pump house without any problem. We should have some additional footage from, we hope, this week.
Yes, we will. So let me just explain what you just saw there. That the fish were in a tank that was 4 feet by 8 feet. They were taken from the Yakima's facility there, placed in the tank, allowed to rest about 20 minutes. We then create the flow right in front of the whoosh system there. Just like you saw in that earlier video at the Yakima facility, we've basically taken that here and created a false stream for them. And the bottom there that you're seeing with the rails is there as a false bottom so that we could adjust it to try to figure out the right depth for the fish. For example, the guidelines that are out there for the depth that the water must be for transport of fish, you have the guidelines for nymphs, but the NOAA biologists and so forth would tell you that those guidelines are way overdone for what is actually required. So we were actually seeing when will the Chinook there transport? Yesterday we took that same tank down. 2 days. It took us 2 days. We took the tank down to Newport, Oregon. They have dams that are about to, in an earthquake, they will liquefy. and now number two and number three on the state of Oregon's list of dams to be replaced. We set the system up in 1 day. We had to ship trout, actually, rainbow trout, 10-pound rainbow trout, put them in that same tank. I can tell you the trout after a day were not in good shape. I can tell you, trap and haul, it about wiped them out. I didn't think any of the 20 fish that they transported there were going to make it. We put them into a pen inside the reservoir there. The first day, they were really pretty lifeless. By the second day, they had recovered quite a bit. We took them then from those pens in the reservoir, put them in that tank, and we had about 50 people from the city of Newport coming out to see if a farmed trout would go into that same system automatically. About half of them did. When we turned on the water and so forth, they got the flow going, and they went right into the system. That's the video that will be coming out probably in a week or so. And you'll see then the fish go right up over the dam and be deposited then back into the pen in the reservoir. So that's about as close as we can come without decisions being made by the various interested parties that they actually want a system to show what it can do. Interestingly, there, just as an aside, there were two Chinook salmon at the creek at the 60-year-old fish ladder that doesn't work that were stopped down below 20 feet from us, and I couldn't touch them to get them into the reservoir. So there is a leadership issue here that needs to occur to if you want the salmon to recover, we keep saying, here from our perspective, you got to allow the adults to get back up so they can successfully recover. If you only get that 1% return, you can have a 3,900% increase in the number of fish with 1%. So it's where you're focusing your energy. And from our perspective, it's you got to get the fish up and you got to get them into these tributaries. And really, most places don't have the fish passage. They just don't. And so the fish doesn't have a chance. And that's why you have these hatchery programs. But that can be solved.
Have you done any tests on downstream passage, smolt passage downstream?
Commissioner Graybill, that when we first initially attacked this program, or attacked this, we asked the fish biologists here at Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and others, and the real question was, you know, was decided to move them up. But we have thought about that. That is certainly on the agenda to come down, maybe some new thinking around how the collection is handled, how we then take them in groups downstream in a more gentle manner, and allow them to land without having any problems down below. So, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, but
well,
not quite.
So we had a circumstance just this last year, Wanapum Dam.
Yes.
And the concern not only was what's going to happen to the fish that are arriving upstream to spawn, what's going to happen to our downstream passage, because they had to drop the level 26 feet. And so...
Yes.
Yeah. My folks have a place just above Wanapum Dam, and we actually tried to provide the solution of getting the fish up. In fact, we provided a whole budget to the group that was looking at that during the emergency period of time there, and I think we were about 25% of the cost of what was spent.
Right.
But because of the ESA fish and concerns that I was referring to before, we couldn't put the system in.
Right.
So, and we had 30 days to do it, and we could have done it. But I think it was a matter of this is really why we need these pilot projects like to provide that data so the agencies can respond.
Right.
Commissioner, you lead to another great question. You know, are there other species that we can potentially transport? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. We are hopefully having a sturgeon test this fall. The question of lamprey also has come up often. And, you know, the idea of transporting, collecting and transporting lamprey upstream and getting away from the current lamprey slides that they have is absolutely within our wheelhouse and something that we are very excited to look at and explore as well.
Well, you know, 10 years ago even, I would say fish passage over Chief Joseph or Grand Coulee Dam would have been laughable. But with the technology you're showing us here today, maybe it's staged, but even right now, with what you've shown us, upstream passage at least, is a very real thing. And if you could imagine delivering Chinook back to the original tributaries in BC, which, I mean, that's just amazing.
We are very much involved in that, and whether we want to be or not, the controversies around that. But I think we do want to be involved, I think, in the sense that that's a very doable, from a height perspective, that's the question, so forth. Height is not a limitation with this technology.
Right.
The throughput, how many fish we can put through in a day, is limited when it's higher. But that's the only limitation there.
That's tremendous.
Director?
That was my question. Is there a height limitation and is there a weight limitation? And I did want to tell you, this reminds me when I was about 5 or 6 years old at the Bon Marché in Idaho Falls, and my mom would write a check upstairs and they would it down somewhere in the basement. And, and then pretty soon the change would come back. So
you're right.
I answered myself the three-story question.
But that's the example we often bring up. I'll tell you the significant difference between that system and why I think it was mentioned earlier this is patented, though. In that system, you had to put it into a container, and it went into a hard tube. That container is what's creating the seal between that and the outer that allows you to use just a very small pressure differential. So you've got 14 psi pushing down on you. If you create a small pressure differential between the front of that container and the back, that's what allows you to move it. In our situation, and why the patent office said that it was so inventive, as we said, that limits you. You can do one at a time. That's all you can do. You can't have more than one system or one package in there at one time. But if you have the tube itself conform to the shape of the object that's in the tube, then it doesn't matter. And the first object going through actually creates a vacuum behind it for the next one, so it pulls the next one up. And because you're not pulling a column of water, you're not limited by the physics that would say you can only go up 30 feet without having to overpower it with just pure pressure, which is what kills the fish when you try to do that. So that's the advantage of it from a science perspective.
And from your question on the height and the length, theoretically, no. The longer we go, though, and the higher we go, the less throughput that we have. But when we're talking about throughput, let's talk about the context of seafood processing, where thousands of tons of fish are moved every single day. So in our systems, if it's below about 250 feet, we can successfully transport one fish a second. So it's 60 fish a minute. So we can handle large quantities. The 460-foot system in Norway transports about one fish every 20 seconds or so.
No. One fish
every 3 seconds.
One fish every 3 seconds.
20 a minute.
And so it has a bit of a downslope to it. At the same time, we're still talking about quantities of fish that can be moved in pretty extraordinary numbers.
You could probably do staged systems and also multiple tubes.
Or multiple tubes. And then Eric's experience with smaller fish. This Washougal system was designed for 15 to 30-pound Chinook. The question came up, what do we do with jackfish?
Yeah, so a couple of the concerns we had when we looked at this system was, what do we do with fish that are too small, and what do we do with fish that are too big for the system? And so we designed it for 15 to 30 pounds. We never ran into a fish that was too big. And the jacks, you'd put a jack in there, and if you put an adult behind it, it just pushed it right through. And our other option was is that Woosh provided us these sponges. So they're just a sponge that's about the same size as the tube. And all you do is just put a sponge behind the jack, and it pushes it right out. And so we just recycle the sponges, so we have a large number of sponges. We did not have to use our alternate method of transporting fish up to the truck at all. So worked very well.
In the interest of time, gentlemen, are we nearing...
We are right at the very end. These are simply a couple of design concepts that we can see and think about how we have salmon recovery, fish rescue at different places. This is a volitional entry system based upon a Yakima system. Here is a representation at the Cle Elum River itself. The hatchery broodstock system, our mobile fish rescue unit, very simple, very mobile, can be immediately deployed. And then finally, we can think about what are the other components that are going, component options that can go into this system. Because we singulate each fish through, we can gather data on that. We have designed the system to have cameras on both sides, and we will be testing that, so we can look for adipose fin clips. Can we separate out hatchery fish from wild fish and make these determinations very quickly and easily? We do it in fruit. We can certainly do it in wild species or hatchery species. We can also sort by color, which can then get to all the various species themselves. So,
and just to why it's different than why that's been so hard to do in the past, because the fish is temporarily out of the water, we get a clear picture where when it's in the water, you've got all this turbidity and all this changing conditions all the time. It's almost impossible to get the visual at the quality level that you need in order to be sure of your decision.
Now, if you wanted to see one final video, do we have time for that or not?
Yes. I don't want the commission to miss the video, the one I have seen. So, and then maybe we can ask a few questions after that. But this.
Tuna's understudy that you hope never has to go on, and that stupid fish that doesn't know how rivers work. Salmon famously have to fight their way upstream to spawn. But thanks to hydroelectric dams, that's become increasingly difficult. But don't worry, because as we found out recently, America is on it.
I'm Ben Tracy in Washington State, where we're going to introduce you to a pretty sweet piece of technology known as the Salmon Cannon. That's coming up on CBS This Morning.
You know, sometimes people say the news has lost its touch, but every now and then, they f***ing nail it. That fires fish through a tube and over a dam is absolutely incredible. And if you're wondering what it looks like when they come out the other side, the company that makes it, incidentally called Woosh Innovations, has produced a spectacular slow-motion video set to classical music. In in your darkest moments of despair, when you see a world torn apart by war, I want you to remember that video and think, we can do great things. We can do great things. Let me tell you how much I love the salmon cannon. I love it so much. We made our own cannon this week. So, who wants to give this puppy a go? Let's see where this salmon ends up.
Of course, the situation in the Mid East is the U.S. has been bombing for years.
So we know it works. Let's try firing two fish somewhere else.
Thank you, spatula.
Very nice. Then let's try something a little more difficult.
You took my daughter from me. What did you expect?
I'm not trying to deny it, but I don't remember.
Well, that's convenient.
It cost me your love.
Clearly, this is the greatest object that has ever been invented. So I'm emptying this bucket, and let us see how big we can go on this thing.
Welcome back. I'm Michelle Vito. Incredible footage coming out of Houston Rockets practice. Injured making a block. How are two fingers and is expected to make...
Members of the Obama administration temporarily
did a report about Iran's nuclear program and it
seems interesting how it is.
Except it's bleak, squawk blue. Stick to the script.
I'm glad that you asked us to come down.
It gets better.
The wrong way to do your thing.
Can you send that to us?
Oh yeah, it's sure. It's on the web free from them as well. We should tell you that. I mean, it was really John Oliver's way of hitting everybody over the head to say, hey, you can solve this problem. We're literally going to hit you over the head with this. So,
what's your backgrounds? Are you physicists or engineers or?
We haven't been looking at two lawyers. who haven't practiced in a long period of time and needed to do something else. So we have an exceptional team of engineers, and we have been creating this over the last number of years, starting in the agriculture industry, and it was about the movement of a piece of fruit from the tree itself to the bin in a more efficient manner. And while conducting experiments and testing along the Columbia River, the salmon wars reared their head again in 2009 and 2010, when the federal biological opinion was being relitigated, and it was all over the press. At that point, we all sort of looked at each other and said, well, could you put a fish in there? And it started with that. But this has been a very serious now, you know, development cycle with multiple state, federal, tribal, and conservation partners. And without that, those partnerships, we wouldn't be here. So,
I have a question.
Can you transport a turkey?
Yes, we can, and multiple other things as well.
With your attention to wolves, we haven't tried that.
that's an image in my mind, though. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief because I know we're running out of time, but the comment you made earlier about salmon entrapped by low water, warm water, you know, we've got the drought situation. How mobile are you? I mean, how many places could you be at once? And do you have sort of a fallback plan in place with a department, or are you going to be working on one?
Well, I would say there's no plan at the moment because there's, I think, no funding by the department. We are a small company, relatively speaking, here trying to get what has turned into millions of dollars of R&D to get to this point. The reality is, as we move forward, we would love to have, let's put it that way, a fleet of mobile systems available. It takes us about 8 weeks to produce one. We've got the one unit that's available at the moment, but so I can address one place at the moment. But really, there's a lot of opportunities. Department of Transportation, for example, we got this was from British Columbia. We got a message the other day saying that they're working a highway project, and they've caused a problem with fish. How can we now get around the problem that they created, which I don't yet understand what it is. But so there's going to be real opportunities there. When we were down in Newport, I can tell you, and let me give you a best example of this, was the Elwha. We got called by your own Department of Fish and Wildlife just a few weeks ago, I said, well, I thought taking the dams was supposed to solve that problem. In fact, what's happened with all the silt coming down, it's covering up the egg nests, and so they're having to bring the fish up above those two dams. So they would love a system, a mobile system. In fact, the brainstorming that we were doing was because of the locations that they're having to go to get the fish. I mean, they're doing heroic things to try to capture the fish. It's and endangering themselves, I will say. We are actually going to put a system on a, if we do the project, if they get the funding here, on pontoon boat, basically, so they can transport it to the other side of the river where they can process the fish, basically. And then we will transport it by whoosh system back over to the other side into their truck to get it back into the hatchery or above the dam, whichever they're doing with that those fish. So those situations, I'm surprised all the time. They're all over the place.
We can be deployed with multiple systems in fairly short order. These are systems that can be developed and built. I mean, we just need orders.
Are you a privately held company? Are you selling stock or what's...
We are privately held, and we do have investors. That's the only way this got funded. And really, it's been about $13 million altogether.
We can invite you back for an update in the not-too-distant future.
We would love to do that, and we should thank Eric and his staff, too, who have I was listening to the publicity thing before. The one advantage you've got here with you're getting a lot of free publicity, but it works both ways. And I was thinking about this as you were presenting. If you want the public to respond, they obviously respond to this system. We've been very lucky all over the world it's been happening. But your own efforts to get the publicity out, this is tough because when the fish are not arriving in numbers, and you have all this bad news all the time that's in the press. Yeah. I think it's just a very tangible way for you to demonstrate that you are directly addressing that problem.
Just don't mention wolves. that'll cause a stir.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Chairman Smith, I'd like to mention that I'd like to thank all our biological and hatchery staff for putting up with all of the publicity and cameras in their faces for about 2.5 months last fall. So,
yeah, I'd like to say something, too. I think this is a very good demonstration of the public sector working with the private sector and what you've accomplished as a team here. And so you have kudos from me.
Thank you.
I think you have us all wishing in Washington.
On that, we'll move on.